Hey, this is Miss Melis, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you are listening to Tales from the Tub. The Dog Days in Podcasting. It's Tuesday, August 18th, 2015, and I've got a conversation with my friend Deb Smouse. I'm here with my good friend Deb, who is going to introduce herself and tell my listeners a little bit about who she is and what she does.
I'm so excited to be here, Melissa. This is so much fun. Anyway, my name is Deborah Smouse. I am a life coach and a writer, and I live in Dayton, Ohio. I help people figure out what's next. What do they want to do? What do they want to be when they grow up? And I love it.
Do you know what you want to be when you grow up?
No, I don't think I'm grown up yet sometimes, you know? I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm still 15 and, you know, the world is still waiting for me to explore it. And other times I feel like an ancient soul. So I really think that writing, everything I do comes back to writing in some way. And so am I doing what I'm supposed to be when I grow up? Yeah, in a lot of ways. But I think there's more for me on the horizon when it comes to the written word.
I connected today with my high school biology teacher on Facebook. I liked him. I mean, he was a really awesome teacher. He was very sweet. He was very funny. He let us be creative. He said just because we were gifted kids didn't mean we had to be boring.
Right.
He was a master of really bad puns. And I realized in talking to him that I don't ever have to grow up because I'm 5 feet tall. So anyway, I have all these questions, and I know I sent you a copy, but I just like to use them as a jumping off point sure. So that you have an idea of what we're going to talk about. We don't have to stick directly to them. But what I do want to know, and I know we've touched about this a little bit because we talked about writing, is what's something that sets your soul on fire?
It still comes down to, you know, the written word, and really it's about the story. You know, what story do we tell? I think that all of humanity has been founded on these, whether it was, you know, stories told around a fire to explain the universe and rain and winter, and cake drawings on the walls as all told stories, and even, you know, in the modern day world, you look at a collection of someone's 140-character Twitter posts, or you look at the photos on their Instagram, and you when you see all of these little pieces of a puzzle, it tells you the story of their life. So stories set me on fire. That's what I'm passionate about.
What's a story that's speaking to you right now? It can be a book or a movie or even a song, but, I mean, everything has a story. So what's one story that's really speaking to you right now?
You know, right now I am diving into the world of Barbara Brown Taylor, who is a former Episcopalian priest that left the church, and the first book I read of hers is called An Altar in the World, and that's really drawing me in. She talks about being spiritual and not religious because religious seems to tie us to four walls, and she sees God in everything. In you know, in the grass, and the poor pimply kid at the grocery store sacking her groceries wrong. And so that's the story that I'm really diving into right now. And it's going to be something else, you know, in a week or two. But that's what's working for me now. It's my morning read. I read a chapter every morning with my coffee and move into my day and, you know, slowly savor those words and think about my place in the universe and the reflection of how different our experiences are as women, yet we have these common threads between us.
Do you ever find it really difficult to limit yourself to just one chapter?
In the mornings, no, because what I'm doing is, I mean, this is, you know, a kind of a deep spiritual piece for me, and so I'm approaching it as if I would approach reading the Bible in a way. It's my morning Bible, so to speak. And
it's your practice.
It is my practice. And so being, that meditative type of reading, sometimes I can't even get through a full chapter before I'm full up and I'm ready to like say, okay, this is the stopping point for the day. And plus, since I'm doing it in the morning and I have rededicated time to morning pages, those write three pages, although I'm doing it on 750words.com just to practice not being distracted while I'm typing on the computer and the internet is just with a click away. I read and then I move into my morning pages. So I read first and then move into my morning pages. And usually I'm anxious to get that ball rolling too. So that kind of helps keep me at the chapter limit.
Are you doing morning pages in addition to the journaling that I know you do because we talk about it a lot, or is that something separate? What's a typical day?
A typical day, when John's in town, John's home, and for anyone that reads my blog, his nickname is JB in my work, but his name is John. When John is working and in town this week, he happens to be out of town, we get up and, do the morning snuggles and kind of talk about the day together and what's on tap for each of us. And then when we get up, he goes to the shower. I go to the kitchen and I pack his lunch every day, make the coffee and, race the coffee pot to unload the dishwasher so I don't have to deal with dishes in the sink during the day. And when he leaves for work, I ease into my morning. I have my first cup of coffee. I do my morning reading. I may jot some notes down in my paper journal that I keep, and then I move into the office, and I do the 750words.com, and I race the clock. I try to go no distractions and get those words out as fast as I can, because again, it's a way of training my discipline, and that's. We live in a very distractible world. It's so easy to, while away hours clicking things when we're meant to be creating things too. And so, and 750 words gives you these great little stats, which geek that I am when it comes to statistics, I've started pulling into a spreadsheet so that I can track, how many words I'm typing, how long it's taking me to get there, how many distractions I have, what I'm writing about. It picks out the words and analyzes what you're most concerned with, whether it be like leisure or work or religion or things like that. So it gives you these broad view of what you're doing. And so once I finish my 750 words and put my information into my little spreadsheet, then I move into whatever the day holds for me. And
you're not a project manager at all.
Not at all. and I told John, I've got to make this a spreadsheet. And he said, without statistics of some sort, you can't measure it. And so how can I measure if I'm getting better at my own self-discipline of not being distracted if I don't track it in some way?
That's fair.
And then I move into whatever my day holds for me. I coach. I'm open to clients 3 days a week, and those days right now are Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Mm-hmm. Tuesdays is dedicated to writing only. I don't have any client calls unless there's an emergency for someone, and I set about it to at least get a rough draft of a blog post for work written that day. And so I break some time around 12 to 1 to grab a quick bite to eat and, go upstairs to do that and come back and, work on whatever's on my list for the day. Maybe it's planning some social media. Maybe it's working on a project. Maybe it's coming back to edit again. And then when John texts me that he's on his way home, I do my best to kind of shut down for the day and walk away. Because, working from home requires that we set some boundaries because it's very easy to drag the laptop and into the living room and sit in front of the TV all day and all evening and pick at work all day. But I'm getting better about setting those boundaries and, turning off the computer, walking out of my office,
Are you actually dressing to start your work day at this point or no?
I am most days dressing, you know. A lot of mornings after I do my morning pages and see what's on tap for the day. If I don't have anything, like if I'm talking to clients, I try to go ahead and get my shower done right away. But a lot of times if it's a writing day, I wait to shower until, you know, I at least get some stuff on paper. You know, I get a rough idea of dress. Like I like showering sometimes, you know, washes away the ideas.
And
I like to keep in the flow, but yeah, like this morning, you know, I was dressed in like clothes and makeup and jewelry, you know, by 9 o'clock this morning after I'd already done all the morning stuff and done a little bit of editing and that sort of stuff. So I am trying to get dressed. But then at the end of the day, when John comes home, we usually get a glass of wine and sit out on the porch and, you know, connect, share stories of the day, talk about what happened, which, you know, you have to have a way to download things to your partner so that you're aware of what's going on. And while I don't tell him the details of, you know, coaching sessions or any of that sort of stuff, he needs to know what's happening in my world, just like I need to know what was happening in his world when we're apart.
Is he a good storyteller?
He's an excellent storyteller, but as an introvert, a lot of times by the time he gets home, he's kind of talked out. So
that makes sense.
So, you know, but he, I mean, he comes from an Irish family, and he is, both of his parents are, you know, are Irish, and so he's got that storyteller blood running through him. So he's a very good storyteller. And then, you know, when we've had a glass of wine and kind of made sure that we've told each other the important parts of the day, just in case we don't forget, you know, then he comes and he does what he does to relax, which right now is Xbox golf. And and I go upstairs and make dinner. And for me, that's kind of sacred space for me, too, is to be able to dive into the food and create something. So it's another extension of creation for me to make dinner. And then we have dinner, and sometimes we eat on the deck. Sometimes we do the what I called side-by-side companionship, and we may eat dinner while we watch whatever series we're watching. So mm-hmm. We recently finished watching season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and, you know, we watch just one episode and, you know, we talk about it. We talk about the characters. And for people that think that you can't connect over TV, again, we connect through stories. And so when you mindfully choose something to watch that you're both going to enjoy and you consume it under that guideline, it's a very good way to connect as a family, and it's not mindlessly watching TV. You know,
you're not sitting there binge watching in sweats for 7 hours,
and you're not sitting there just mindlessly surfing and settling here for a few minutes and there. We choose something to watch, and we watch it together, and we watch the characters evolve. And again, we lose ourselves in the stories, and we relate to them. You know, we tend to watch, like, we watched that. We recently watched all of Angel. Again, recently, things that have, like, that hero story, you know, mm-hmm. the hero journey. Those are the kinds of things that he and I watch together. And then, in all honesty, once we've done that, we go to bed. And it doesn't matter sometimes if it's, you know, 9 o'clock or 9:30. If we're tired, you know, do dishes and head to bed, because that is one thing that has to be done before I go to bed. No dishes in the sink. Got to turn the dishwasher on. I can't stand to wake up to dishes in the sink. So
you know. I can't either. If my kitchen is messy when I wake up in the morning, it ruins my whole day.
It does. It makes me irritable. So that, and then head to bed, and that's it. That's a day.
When we all have bad moods, everybody does. We all have days when creativity isn't flowing and nothing is working. So when you have a day like that, how do you take yourself out of it?
I have a lot of little things that I can do. If I've come down to the office and I just can't get into something, you know, and I'm trying to write and I'm feeling blocked, a lot of times I'll go back upstairs and I'll, like, brush my teeth and wash my face. If I haven't gotten dressed, I get dressed. And sometimes if I am dressed, maybe I change clothes. And it's like mm-hmm. I try to reset my day, you know, by doing those kinds of self-care acts, you know. Those things kind of like brushing your teeth kind of wakes up your mouth, but it wakes up all your senses. You've got the minty toothpaste and all of those things in your, you know, so that kind of wakes you up. That's a good way for me to one way for me to reset. I go out on the deck, and, you know, we have an upstairs deck that's screened in, and we have a porch downstairs. I go out on the deck, and I just, you know, I be a part of nature. You know, we've got a little pond, so I hear the little trickling of the pond and see the frogs. They panic every time we open the door and jump into the pond, and I go and peek at them and look at their little eyes. There's three little frogs that live in our pond, and look at their little eyes peeking at me up through the water and say, dude, I'm not going to do anything to you. You know, I don't know why you go run away. Or go out on the bike. You know, sometimes when you're in that bad mood, you've got to, like, expend the energy in your body out into the earth. And so biking or walking or even going for a run is a way to, like, take all this pent-up energy you have. And I'm an extrovert. And working at home by myself means a lot of times I get a lot of energy that's just pent up in me that I haven't had a way to expend by, like, sharing stories with people that day. And so by, like, giving it to the earth through my body is another great way to kind of reset things.
Okay. You talked about the fact that the stories, the TV shows that you and John watch together all involve heroes. So be a hero for me. If you could solve one of the world's problems, no matter how big or small, it can be something tiny or it can be something that's really influential, what would you choose?
I think it would have to be quality food and water for every human soul. I mean, we're meant to feed our bodies. We're meant to quench our thirst and to know that there are people in the world that don't have access to, you know, not only can they not afford food, they really don't even have access to food. They don't have access to clean water. That's what I would solve, that everybody wouldn't go hungry and thirsty. Because when you're hungry and thirsty, you don't rest well. You don't live well. I mean, it affects your whole quality of life. I mean, just think about, you know, all the research they talk about, you know, when you're hangry, you know, you're hungry, it makes you angry. And now the news recent one was that they tested women. They put women in an MRI machine and had them think about sex. And if they hadn't eaten, they were so focused on being hungry that they couldn't even get aroused. Whereas if they ate, then they were able to relax enough and be aroused. And so they were.
See, and men think it's just chocolate.
Right.
It's not.
It's not. It's food. So, you know, if being hungry makes those of us that live in this third, you know, this first world country with access to food and everything, if it makes us angry and it kills our, you know, our sex drive and doesn't allow us to sleep well, imagine what it's like to not have access to food. And think about the quality of life. So that would be my hero thing.
It's been interesting because I talked to my friend Clay yesterday and I asked him the same question, and he also mentioned that water was a big thing for him, water and food. So I think that's something that's really becoming a universal need that we're all becoming more aware of. And I think that's good, but I think we need to do more.
And we do. And you know, like one of the things that we do here in our home is that I buy as much locally sourced food as I can. I'm very lucky that I have a grocery store that works with a lot of local farmers. And so I can walk into that store and buy, you know, tomatoes that were grown by the Amish farmer that lives, you know, within a drive from here. I can buy local mm-hmm. chicken and eggs and beef. I can buy all and dairy products. I can buy all those things that have been locally sourced and that are quality. They're not GMO. They may not be organic, but they're at least they're not genetically modified. And that's some of the small ways that we can get back to the food community, that we support the people that grow food for us or farm for us, whether it be pig farming or, you know, chicken farming or whatever, ethically. They ethically treat their animals well so that, you know, it's about energy too, you know. So if you're eating chicken that comes from a factory situation versus a chicken that's been, you know, able to have plenty of room to roam around and been fed good food, the quality of life of that animal, I think, comes through in your food and in the way you're feeding yourself.
Oh, absolutely. And more than just the flavor, you can just tell.
You can just tell. And so when you look on the scale like that, it's not feeding the world, but what it is doing, it is supporting your local agricultural community so that they can continue to support their brothers in this agricultural community, because it's a big community, you know?
It is. As an extrovert, you need people in a way that introverts don't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy being alone.
Right.
But you do have to have contact in order to recharge.
Right.
So if there's one person in your life who's been particularly influential on you, not necessarily because you're an introvert, but just in general, who is that person?
Like a life person or a...
An actual person.
An actual person? Hmm.
You've interacted with.
That I've interacted with that's been effective.
But it doesn't have to be someone who's in your life right now. It can be a teacher or a parent or whatever.
Yeah, I would have to say that, you know, there are some teachers throughout my entire life that have always supported my creativity and encouraged me to not, you know, hide my light. And there's been a series of those teachers that I was, like, so blessed to be around. It's like they create this amalgam of, you know, the perfect teacher of, you know, from my kindergarten teacher who saw that she couldn't keep my attention all day, and I mm-hmm. was sent across the room to the other kindergarten teacher to do the work in that room when I was done. So they kept me busy. You know, I just went back and forth between the two kindergarten classes, even though Ms. Goodwin was my teacher. And then the teachers that, you know, allowed me to read, you know, I don't know how they do it in schools now, but, you know, when I was in elementary school, we had, and I remember second grade, Mrs. Dean, she was probably the hardest teacher, but one of the best teachers I had, in that we had this chart of books that we were supposed to read. And by Christmas, I had already read the entire chart. I was done with all the books that we were supposed to read that year. And she would let me go to the library and pick out the next book that I wanted to read, and she didn't censor me. You know, I wasn't reading on a second grade level, but she didn't censor me to stay in my grade level. I could read whatever I wanted.
That's really lucky. A lot of kids don't have that.
I know.
So we talked about food and water already. So I'm not going to ask you if there's a charity or cause you feel strongly about, because I think we would just be rehashing the same thing. But if there's anything else that you want people to know that you feel passionate about, what is it?
We have to find grace and forgiveness for ourselves. Nobody in this life is perfect. You know, we can't live perfect lives. We can't do everything right. We're going to make mistakes. And, you know, you pass somebody that's flipping you off in traffic, or, you know, they're so angry, you can feel the anger, like, waving off of them at the grocery store. And it's so easy to judge that person. And I always remind myself, gosh, if they are that hateful in public to strangers, imagine what their inner dialogue must be like. Imagine how mean they are to themselves in their own head.
Oh, really?
And I think that's the other thing that I would impart is, you know, you've got to find grace for yourself. You have to seek to forgive yourself for the past, because we can't change the past. It's done. We just have to move forward. And so that's something I'm passionate about. I think we've got to find a lot more compassion for ourselves. Because without compassion for ourselves, it's hard to be compassionate to anybody else. It's hard to love anyone else.
I agree. Would just finding grace and forgiveness and being compassionate with yourself and others, would that be the best piece of advice you would offer? Or if you had one piece of wisdom that you really wanted to share, what else would it be?
It is to fall in love with the day-to-day activities of living. You know, too often we look to the big days, the wedding, the class reunion, the honeymoon, you know, New Year's Eve. And what we're going to remember, though, when we're on our deathbeds, yeah, we'll remember traces of those big days, but we're going to remember the everyday rhythm of our life. And so if we're constantly looking to those big events, you miss the beauty that's here now in your daily life. So you have to find a way to love the daily way you're living. And if you don't love it, find a way to create some piece of that day that is loving and nourishing.
I'm going to ask you just a couple of fun questions now.
Okay.
The first one is, what's the last song you listened to that made you happy?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm always listening to stuff. It was in, it was Maroon 5. And I think it was Sunday morning, and I was just listening to it this morning when I was taking my shower. I just like the whole feel and the rhythm of it.
Cool. And if you could have dinner with one historical figure, celebrity, or fictional character, who would they be?
Yeah, I think I'd have to have dinner with Abraham Lincoln. I've read his works for years. His is my favorite memorial. When I go to D.C., I can sit there for hours. I think that he was a very interesting person. You know, he battled depression. He battled insomnia. But he was a very loving man and a very intelligent man. And I think that he would be great to sit down and share a meal with.
And then finally, where can we find you on the net, in media, and stuff like that?
Okay, great. You can find me at deborasmouse.com, which is DEBRASMOUSE.com. And I'm on all the social places, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LO, Google+, all under Deborah Smouse or Deb Smouse.
The Bathtub Mermaid is written and produced by Melissa A. Bartell and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. Music for this episode was provided by Mebio's Music Alley, a great resource for PodSafe music. Visit them at music.mebio.com. The opening song is Soap in a Bathtub by Stony. The closing song is You Can Use My Bathtub by Little Tom. The Bathtub Mermaid is produced and recorded using BossJock and Audacity. You can contact me by leaving a comment at the website, www.bathtubmermaid.com, by finding me on Twitter, at Meliss, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, or by sending an email to Meliss, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, at starfleet.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, never let your bathwater get too cold.
And still it shows, but you can use my bathtub. Understand, you can use my bathtub. Yes, you can.